Welcome to the Neil Before Zod podcast. I'm Adam Levine, and joining me is Lee Klontz.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
That's awesome. Just to let everybody know, we're sort of a pair of super nerds, and we've been debating and going back and forth on video game stuff, TV, comics, sci-fi, technology, consumer electronics. We've had these conversations, and now we're going to share them with our adoring fans, which at the moment might just be our wives, but we hope to build out an audience who can come and find us and stay with us, we hope. Lee?
Yeah, we would love to hear if there are things you like, things you don't like, any feedback at all. You can hit us up on Twitter at Zod Podcast, and we welcome any feedback and any ideas for future shows.
Awesome. All right, let's get this thing started.
Let's go. So we're going to move into a segment called The Big Questions, where tonight we're going to talk about the new X-Men movie and particularly why Bryan Singer has such a hard time dealing with the fact that not only is Mystique not interesting, she's also not even really one of the core X-Men. I'm a little concerned about the fact that Jennifer Lawrence has become such a big star that she's essentially taken over the franchise and she seems completely bored with it. And I think she may actually ruin what little hope there is for X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, let me ask you a question, just right off the bat here, Lee. Do you like Jennifer Lawrence? Are you down with the J-Law?
I think it's impossible to dislike Jennifer Lawrence. She's great. She seems like a lot of fun. She's made some good movies. I think she's a really weird choice for Mystique. I think making Mystique kind of a blue serpent lady is really nothing like my perception of Mystique from the comics. Having seen her in about 8 or 9 movies now, though, I'm really tired of that character.
Now, well, do you think that they picked her in the first place because of the whole first Mystique, which was Rebecca Romijn Stamos? Okay, so they started with her, you know, model turned actress. Do you think, A, they felt trapped into, A, let's make sure she's a blonde, let's make sure she's good looking? Don't you think that was like kind of part of the trap that they were into right away in picking her in the first place?
So I think you have two potential problems here. One is, with all of the great X-Men characters, and there are tons of great X-Men characters,
yeah,
why would they put so much time and effort into Mystique, who is primarily known as a, you know, Brotherhood of Evil Mutants member? She's spent a little time as a hero. Most of the time, she's been a villain. Even in the original X-Men movie, she was, you know, barely in the movie at all. My concern is they pick her because she is cheap, because they can just turn her into a regular actress 90% of the time, and they don't have to put the blue makeup on or the contacts in or the CG or whatever they're doing now. I think now that they've committed to her, then they had to find an actress who could, you know, headline the movie. And, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is hard to beat for that. I just think that she's a miserably boring character. Her powers aren't really clear. You know, in the first X-Men movie, she gets skewered by all three of Wolverine's claws and seems completely unfazed by it. And she can not only change her appearance, but she can actually take the shape of, you know, clothing. She can change her height. She's just become this kind of deus ex machina for the entire X-Men franchise. And I think she's really boring. And I'm incredibly tired of her. And I really, really hope she dies in X-Men Apocalypse.
Wow. That's not harsh at all.
Am I wrong?
Well, no, I agree with you. I mean, I just think it was sort of a perfect storm. Like, you have to remember, you know,
perfect storm.
So she gets basically discovered, and we're talking J-Law again, in Winter's Bone, and then X-Men First Class comes out, and this is, you know, before the Hunger Games, right? And suddenly they have somebody who's probably signed into a contract, somebody they probably weren't initially thinking was going to be the lead of all these movies that came after. Don't you think they sort of got trapped into the, hey, we've got J-Law, we've got a superstar, she's playing a character, she's willing to come back and play it again, let's just like bend this whole thing around her? Again, I'm not saying I think it was a good idea, But you can understand how they got there, right?
Totally. But I don't know that I've seen anyone since maybe Natalie Portman in the second Thor movie who looked more like a prisoner of war than someone who is like attacking this role with any enthusiasm. And I don't know, they had the same problem with Halle Berry, right? They signed her to some contract. She clearly thinks the material is beneath her. She clearly doesn't find it interesting because it's not. I mean, we could talk about whether there has been a truly great X-Men movie, because I don't think there has been. Maybe not even a really good one, except maybe for X2. But anyway, I think she just really seems miserable in the role. I mean, in the trailer, that whole speech she's supposed to be giving about your X-Men now, it seems just absolutely phoned in and uninspired. It's almost like a video game actor rather than, an Academy Award winner, and Academy Award nominee multiple times. She seems like she really couldn't possibly care less about what she's doing or what she's saying. And again, I think the actual character itself is incredibly boring.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. That character is boring. The way they slide around with her powers and her abilities and her skill set, they play kind of fast and loose. You know, she was like a super ninja in the last couple movies where she could basically go anywhere. No one could really stop her when she used her powers properly. That seems a little dicey to me at best. I think, you know, this idea that you've raised about sort of she's mailing it in. Maybe because the movies aren't that good, I guess I would counter with Fassbender. He's not mailing it in. I mean, he's sort of the consummate pro, right? He's made Magneto as interesting as you probably can make that character interesting in every movie he's taken that role on.
No, it's true. And I mean, Fassbender's great. I mean, you look at Patrick Stewart, right? I mean, his entire power is like riding around in a wheelchair and touching his forehead, right? That's literally all he ever does. And yet when he's in the movie, you can't take your eyes off him. He's really interesting, and he really seems to find some richness in that role. I feel like the more they focus the X-Men movies on Jennifer Lawrence, the less compelling they get, the less I care about them. I mean, as much as people really got behind Days of Future Past, I was totally asleep the whole movie. I mean, the only thing in that movie that I cared about, oddly enough, was Quicksilver, and that's despite the most absurd costume perhaps in all of modern superhero film.
You mean you don't, your idea of a good costume isn't goggles and sort of like spray painted silver hair?
An Atari jacket?
An
Yeah, I
Atari
mean.
jacket, yeah. I mean, that was the sad thing about that film was the sequence where he goes in and in that fight in the kitchen after they spring Magneto. That was like all anybody was really talking about coming out of that film. Like, oh, that was so cool.
Yeah, and this is a movie where they're dropping baseball stadiums out of the sky, and there are Sentinels. I mean, God, how long have we wanted to see a Sentinels movie? And the thing you're most excited by is this like 3 minute scene with Quicksilver. And I think that somebody's got to take the reins away from Bryan Singer, and it's like he's making movies that are just good enough to demand sequels, but they're not really good enough to stand up to what Marvel's doing right now, Marvel Studios, I should say, because there's just this kind of sense of malaise and overstuffedness. There's too many X-Men. I'm glad to see Nightcrawler's back, but now we've got this like really complicated retcon plot where the earlier movies have basically been wiped out of existence, and I think Apocalypse could be a real dud, and I'm sure it'll make enough money to make another Wolverine movie, or to maybe keep the franchise going. But wow, I really wish that they could get that back into the proper Marvel Cinematic Universe, because I'm super bored with what they've got right now.
Well, I mean, we already do know there is another Wolverine movie coming, and it's going to be rated R, thanks probably to Deadpool's success. But yeah, I'm with you. I would prefer to see all of the properties just revert to Disney and let them put them in the capable hands of the machine they have. You know, the Russo brothers, what they did with Captain America, it's been fantastic. They have people there making movies who seem to understand how to mix in characters a lot better. You know, and they're not perfect. Age of Ultron was a bit of a car wreck, you know, I think you would agree. And that suffered from too many characters. And in fact, Quicksilver was one of them. But that's a whole different problem with licensing and multiple studios having the right to the same character. But I think what we saw with Spider-Man already in Civil War is a good sign for what could be down the road if the X-Men ever sort of are free to join what's just clearly a much better crafted universe, right?
Yeah, and it really seems like Marvel as a company is doing everything it can to make the X-Men as irrelevant to their kind of core brands as they can. I mean, they really want to kill that franchise off so they can get it back, and they just aren't going to be able to do it. And they need them, honestly. I don't think that the push for Inhumans is going to work. Nobody knows who the Inhumans are, and, you know, frankly, the Inhumans are kind of, look, I love comics and I love Marvel. The Inhumans as a team, the Inhumans royal family, are ridiculous, right? I mean, you got a giant dog, you've got a woman with prehensile hair, you've got a guy who can't speak. I mean, this is going to be a very hard team to focus the future on, and I think they could really benefit from having the X-Men back, because having mutants in the universe opens up so many possibilities. But I don't see Fox letting them go.
Yeah, probably not, especially if they can keep cranking out reasonably good successes. Like, I would think the next Wolverine film, if it's R and they do it right, that could be successful. I think this film, I have a tough time thinking it's going to do well. You know, there's a point where there's going to be fatigue and pushback and or just bad word of mouth, like you saw with, you know, Batman versus Superman, where people rushed out and saw it, all the fanboys, but then everyone was like, don't go see that. And a lot of people didn't. And even though it made a fair amount of money, it was nowhere near what I think they were hoping it would be. And, you know, you just saw they're shaking up their studio and the executives working on that stuff. So that wasn't a success. And you have to wonder if something is coming like that with the X-Men franchise. And maybe this is what's going to happen. Maybe this film's just going to not do very well.
Yeah, I mean, my fear is that it's going to do just well enough. I really wish it would completely just turd out, and then they'd have to reboot, because I think it's time. I think it's bloated and it's confusing, and the actors don't care, and frankly, at this point, neither do I.
Wow, harsh words. The actors don't care.
I don't think they do. They all seemed to be sleepwalking, and maybe that's Bryan Singer's fault. Maybe it's because the scripts are kind of ridiculous. Maybe it's because everything is CGI. But honestly, everything I've seen from that the trailer looks like a video game, or, you know, the joke about Apocalypse looking like Ivan Ooze. You know,
that was rough.
I mean, yeah. But it's kind of true. I mean, yeah. I was looking at the Apocalypse X Factor comics in Marvel Unlimited the other day. Yeah. Apocalypse is a pretty cool looking dude, and Apocalypse in the movie, not so cool. I mean, they've got a great actor in that getup, but I don't know. I have very little hope for this movie. I think it's going to be a real turd.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and you've mentioned Bryan Singer a couple times. You know, after the first two X-Men movies, I was like, I can believe in Bryan Singer, but then when he jumped ship away from Fox and X-Men and then went and did the Superman Returns, which was a complete disaster of a film. Awful. on every possible level, right? That's the kind of movie where you're like, how do you get another job after a stinker like that? But he did, and they brought him back into the fold, and he's getting his chance. I think at the end, you're going to look back the same way I think you can look back at the first two X-Men movies, and I'm not sure he's ever going to direct a film that's going to stand up, you know, 5-10 years down the road. Forget about it in the moment, you know, years down the road. You know, when you can go back and rewatch a film like The Avengers or Winter Soldier, I think you're going to be enjoying those films for a long time to come. I don't think the same is going to be said about anything Bryan Singer does, and maybe any of these X-Men movies, period.
Well, and, you know, I think you're right. And I think the other thing is, I think that maybe the X-Men movies came around a little too early. You know, people weren't quite comfortable with the idea of comic book characters behaving like comic book characters. And, you know, it's hard to imagine you know, a time before the Avengers, but there was a time before the Avengers. There was a time when people wondered if you could make a Captain America movie or a Thor movie. So when you go back and you look at X-Men now, there's really two huge problems with it. One is it's a really cheap looking movie, and you know, that's not Bryan Singer's fault. I think he did the best he could with the budget he had, and frankly, with the budget he had, I guess he did a really good job. But the other thing is it doesn't really feel like an X-Men movie. To me, anyway, it feels like a Wolverine movie with some X-Men kind of thrown in. But no one, you know, they joke about the fact that they don't really have proper costumes. They're all in the black leather. You know, I want to see Wolverine in the brown costume, or in maybe the yellow and blue costume. I want to see Wolverine in costume with the mask on. And I got to tell you, the R-rated Wolverine better have a costume for him, because if Hugh Jackman plays Wolverine in what, 9 different movies and never gets to put on that awesome getup, I will be really disappointed.
Well, they did tease the costume coming out of the last Wolverine standalone film. I don't know if you at the end, you
it
know,
didn't
where
it look great. It yeah. looked perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I want to see the original. I'm shipping for the yellow and blue. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'll take either. You know, I was always partial to the Frank Miller age, the brown, but whatever. I'll take any, because that's a classic comic book getup, and I think the world is ready for it now.
Well, we'll find out. It's coming.
It's coming.
Let's move on to our next bit, which is the trailer talk segment. This is where we're going to sort of break down 3 trailers we've watched, and we hope you will watch as well, and we'll make sure we put those links somewhere where you can find them. Okay, we're going to start off with Assassin's Creed. Let's have a quick listen.
You're about to enter the Animus. What you're about to see, hear, and feel are the memories of your ancestor, who has been dead for 500 years.
What do you want from me?
Your past.
Lee can probably tell you a lot more about this because he's a big fan of the game, and I think you've played most of them, right?
I have played all of them some. A couple of them I've finished. So, yeah, I've always been, a bigger fan of the Assassin's Creed franchise than you have been. And you know, just to step back for a second, it's the Assassin's Creed concept is actually kind of interesting and has the potential to make a more compelling movie than the you might first think. The idea is that you have a character, and it's a different character. Fassbender's character in this movie is different from the character in the games, but a character whose ancestors were assassins, and this company has created a device called the Animus that you can connect yourself into, and you can relive your ancestors' experiences through genetic memories, which is obviously BS, but that's the premise of the game. The thing that makes it kind of interesting as a game is it plays with the kind of the trope of dying in a game, which, you know, normally you die and then you load from a save point and you try again. The notion between inside Assassin's Creed games is that you die when you do something that was too different from what your ancestor did to reconcile with the memory, and you get out of sync with the memory, and then it kind of resets you back to the proper memory. So, you know, we're one of the things that a lot of games have over the past few years have played around with, like BioShock, is this notion that even games that give you the illusion of free will are typically leading you down a path. And you know, even though Assassin's Creed is an open world style game, with some kind of overarching missions, you're still being led down a path. The game kind of plays with that idea that you're replaying your own ancestral history, and that's why you can't vary too much. That's why you can't just go, you know, running off, and that's why there are the invisible walls, because your ancestor did not go there yet, and so you can't go there yet. And so, you know, it kind of makes some smart decisions as a game in order to kind of make the game feel more like an experience you'd be having inside of this kind of virtual reality system. So I say all that to say there's potential here, although it feels very Prince of Persia to me, and I don't mean that in a good way. Did you see Prince of Persia?
Did I see it? Love that film. No, I did. That film was a complete train wreck also, which is probably the third or fourth thing I've called a train wreck today, but it was. And I liked the idea of it. I liked the casting, but oh man.
It's awful, right?
It was just awful. The plot was garbage. You know, the effects were fine. Again, I thought the acting was okay. It was a good-looking film, but I don't know. It was probably that there was probably no good film to be had there, right?
No, definitely not. Now, with Assassin's Creed, I think there is a potential for a good film. I think what they really need to do, though, if you're asking me, is to really break it off from being an adaptation of a video game, because you know, the things that make a great game are often very different from the things that make a great movie. I think the idea of having someone who, you know, is kind of forced to reach into their past, again, through this kind of absurd concept of, you know, robust genetic memory. But okay, if you buy that for a second, then it's kind of an interesting concept. And there's this war going on that they're involved with, which, you know, I'm assuming, I won't spoil anything because I'm assuming the movie and the game do have some things involved, something similar. But I'm worried that they're going to, and the trailer looks like they're going to be putting in a lot of fan service. And I think focusing on fans of the game is a sure way to make this movie a real stinker. You know, one of the things you see a lot in the trailer is these moments where he's kind of on a ledge and looking out, and he's jumping into the hay bale, and he's got the wrist-mounted knives, and all that's straight from the game. And, I mean, I guess you need some of that. But I think if you get too much of that, you end up with 90% of your audience not getting or caring about the references, and 10%, you know, feeling, you know, maybe that like they get the reference, but maybe feeling kind of pandered to. I really hope they take the plot elements of Assassin's Creed and make a really awesome movie out of it, because I think they could do that. I don't think they will. I think it's going to stink. I think you're almost always safe betting against a video game movie, and I am betting against Assassin's Creed every day of the week. But I do hold out a sliver of hope that, you know, they might be able to do something interesting with it. I mean, Fassbender's certainly an interesting guy to watch, but, you know, he was in Prometheus, so it's not like he is incapable of making a dud of a movie. He can be great in a movie, and the movie is still not very good.
Yeah, I mean, Prometheus certainly wasn't his fault.
And not at
all. This definitely, I don't know, I saw the trailer and I'm like, man, this guy is just taking a paycheck. And, you know, I'm not going to fault somebody for doing that. You know, if somebody wants to pay him a lot of money to come into a film that, I'll be damned if that has any chance, like you said, of being good. You know, that there's that last scene in the trailer where he dives out of a tower and it, you know, looks like he's falling 30, 40, 50 feet. And I was like, well, come on.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine in a video game, you know, where people have, you know, adamantium cartilage and no problem falling out of high spaces. But when you start putting that in a film, it's like you said, it takes you out of it. You're just like, okay, that's garbage. Right. And if you're basically saying I travel back in time, well, did I travel back in time into Spider-Man? You know, why are my ancestors more athletically gifted than, you know, the rest of the human population? I don't know.
Well, and this is exactly the problem. You, as someone who does not play that series, you see that and you're like, well, that's ridiculous. I see it and I'm like, well, yeah, that's what happens in the game. It is ridiculous, but it's fan service to a very small segment of the population, whereas most people are going to think it's just stupid, because it's kind of stupid. I mean, that's what you do in the game. You jump off these gigantic towers and somehow, you know, 4 feet of hay is enough to, you know, to slow you down, whereas you would have been liquefied for sure in real life. So I don't know. I think they're going to probably make the mistake of hewing too much to the fans, and they're going to end up with a mess.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'd be shocked if that's not Tanksville, USA. Well, you know, we'll see what budget they put towards it, but good luck with that one.
Yeah, I'm thinking Prince of Persia in the Spanish Inquisition is what this movie's going to be.
Yeah, no, I think that's the perfect comparison.
Anything better?
Well, there's two more that we're going to talk about. The first one is Elstray 1976, which is, I believe it's a documentary style where they're going to go back and assemble all the footage of a lot of the people who were involved in the production of Star Wars. And if you watch the trailer, they have all sorts of interviews with, you know, people you don't know because you never saw them, like the actor that played Greedo, or, you know, the guy who was standing around as a stormtrooper. And it looks like they've sort of parsed that together to tell a story about what it was like making this film, you know, at a very interesting time to have been making that film in the 70s when, you know, it was before itself and people didn't know how it was going to turn out. People didn't know it was going to be received the way it was. And this is sort of telling that documentary. I don't know how wide ranging it's going to be, but I believe that's the focus of it. And that looks pretty cool to me. Like I'm down to see that.
Okay, before we get too far, let's have a quick listen to a bit of the trailer.
I kind of thought it was a low-budget film to begin with.
It was just like another job, except you look weird.
I had lunch with Alec Guinness. We used to go in and sort of practice the fight together, like kids fighting in the back garden.
Yeah, I mean, what I think is so interesting about that trailer is, you know, Star Wars, I think it's safe to say, was the first movie that really made fandom into a lifelong career, right? I mean, Jeremy Bullock played Boba Fett, you know, behind a mask and really just kind of stood there and walked around a couple of times. He really didn't do anything. And yet his entire career now is he can work the convention circuit for the rest of his life and there will be people lined up to get his autograph. And that's kind of insane. The woman who played Greedo, I mean, that's her. She's famous for, you know, a few days of sitting in a latex mask and you know, either shooting first or not, depending on your currency with whatever version of Star Wars is acceptable right now. but yeah, I think that is a really interesting take. I mean, there's David Prowse was apparently quite angry at the way his voice was dubbed over by James Earl Jones when he actually went to see Star Wars. I don't think he knew that before.
Surprise!
Yeah. And, you know, he's always been kind of angry about that. And I think there are some really interesting stories there. I've not seen a documentary quite like this or quite focused on these individuals. So I think it's a great idea.
I guess I'm kind of surprised. I'm not somebody who spends a whole lot of time watching extras on Blu-rays and things like that. I'm sort of surprised that hadn't been covered along the way after 5 million releases of Star Wars on DVD and Blu-ray and, you know, at some point coming on UHD 4K at some point, that they hadn't actually done this themselves. That surprised me.
I think, and this is not to speak ill of Father George, you know, look, I have a child's middle name is Lucas. Like I, you know, love George Lucas. But you know, before he went crazy, he's never really abided, what I guess you might call heretics. You know, he doesn't like people who kind of speak out against the Star Wars franchise. And I mean, David Prowse has not been a guy who over the years has really, spoken very highly of him. And, you know, there are a lot of people who did not find working with him very easy and the experience of making movies with him to be a very positive experience. And so, I wonder if, you know, he kind of treated those people like they were kind of dead to him and wrote them off. Because otherwise you would think that somebody would have done this before, whether it was Lucasfilm or whether it was a third party. One thing I find interesting about that movie is about that documentary is the rights involved, and I assume that they don't have any rights to actually show actual scenes from Star Wars. Maybe they do. I don't know how they actually got their mitts on these costumes that they're showing. I don't know if those are recreations, but yeah. I'll be really kind of interested to see how they work around, because this is just a small production company. It's not affiliated with Disney or Lucas or anybody. So I do kind of wonder how they're handling the complicated rights that are, I'm sure, involved when you have, you know, you got Fox involved because they've got distribution rights for the original trilogy for forever. So I really wonder what that's going to be like. Something tells me they're going to have to do some kind of creative editing and production.
All right, so the third trailer we're going to talk about, and I should preface this by saying, by no means are we saying you should go see this film, because this film looks so amazingly awful. It may be talked about for years to come. The movie is Andron, and here's a quick taste to wet your whistle.
Contenders are engaged, the puzzle established. Various elements are being linked up. Now let's see if they can figure out how to put them all together.
The title alone suggests a quality film.
If you didn't watch a second of the trailer and you heard Andron, you'd probably think it was like some early 70s science fiction film, right? It has that vibe to it.
It does.
You know, as you start watching the trailer, though, you're treated to a couple of classic check-cashing performances. You know, it's sort of going along in this trailer and suddenly pops up Alec Baldwin and Danny, you know, I'm too old for this shit, Glover, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, this is what has happened, I think, as a result of the Hunger Games and the Maze Runner and Divergent and all these other kind of dystopian sci-fi, you know, group of people has to kind of fight each other, you know. I mean, I think The Running Man still did it best. But this kind of subgenre that's emerged in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years of like, you know, kind of attractive people in fetish gear beating each other up. And then, you know, you have an actor of some esteem kind of hovering above it all, you know, whether it's Philip Seymour Hoffman or Kate Winslet or whatever. In this case, it's Alec Baldwin, who, as I'm watching the trailer, I'm actually not sure he was ever on the same set as any of the young people. Like, I think he may have actually shot this whole thing, like, you know, completely independently, all by himself, because there's no sign that he ever interacts with another human being. I think there may be one scene where it looks like he and Danny Glover were together, but it's Danny Glover from the back, so it could be a body double. I think when the story of this movie comes out, if it ever does, if the movie ever comes out, I think we may find out that Alec Baldwin shot his scenes completely alone and probably under the influence of spirits.
Yeah, I think this has classic shot in one day, shot one take only written all over it. It's good stuff.
It could be a legendarily awesome Battlefield Earth Zardoz kind of sci-fi disaster. Something tells me it's just going to stink, and it's going to look, you know, it's going to look slick enough, and it's going to just be awful. It's not even going to be fun. But the title alone almost has me sold on at least one late night cable hate watch. So
yeah, no, I'm down to watch this, and if we do watch this, one of us, I promise, will give a review of it.
Future show,
absolutely. Okay, now we're moving on to our Gaming Around segment, and today we're going to talk about the E3 show. For those who don't know what that is the Electronic Entertainment Expo. It's being held in Los Angeles, June 14 through the 16th, and basically it's a gathering for video game companies to kind of show off their wares. Sometimes it's hardware, sometimes it's software, sometimes it's games that are coming up this year, sometimes it's games that are going to be coming out next year. Sometimes they'll try to feature a game that just came out, or, you know, that they're just trying to throw a little bit of more media attention towards. This is a convention that originally was open to media and fans, and a couple years ago they decided to make it media only, and we'll sort of talk about how maybe that hasn't worked out so well for the convention. But I thought, Lee, we'd start off by kind of going through the games that have been announced, and you can kind of tell me as we go through here which of these sound interesting to you. It's kind of a short list.
It is a short list and a very sequel heavy list, which isn't surprising, but it's definitely there's not a lot of original IP here.
Yeah. Okay, so and this list is according to our friends at IGN, who do a wonderful job of updating these things, so we don't have to do the work. So let's see. The top item is Battlefield 1, which they just recently released a trailer for that looked pretty cool, I thought. There was a lot of buzz on that on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's really done anything interesting with World War One, at least not in the first-person shooter realm. I think the big question will be, you know, World War One. Was a pretty grim time, and you know, World War II has, you know, has tanks and has, you know, planes, and it has lots of very kind of memorable sequences. You have D-Day, you have all these kind of moments that we've played in games over and over. You know, trench warfare and mustard gas and just, you know, fields of dead bodies are going to be. It's going to be interesting to see how they make that into an entertainment experience without feeling like they're kind of, you know, wallowing in just awfulness. Because, I mean, World War One, yeah, it was pretty awful time.
I mean, are you saying you're not interested in a game where your toes might freeze off and you may starve to death? That doesn't seem like a good gaming experience.
I want the game where I'm just huddled down in a trench, choking to death, and you know, vomiting up my own stomach lining. You know, like, I mean, I don't know. I hope they can find a way to make the gameplay interesting and, I mean, fun. I mean, it feels weird to say it should be fun, but it should be fun. It's a game. You know, Battlefield is fun. I do think they've got a little bit of a tougher time kind of making that, making some of the fighting concepts into something that people will feel comfortable with.
All right, so you in or out on this game? Are you going to buy it, you think, eventually?
It's funny. I've never been a huge Battlefield fan, but what I've seen is pretty interesting. I mean, it's a great trailer, so I will definitely give it a look.
Okay. All right, some other games. Black the Fall, Call of Duty, another Call of Duty, in case you were wondering if there was going to be another one.
There will be.
Yeah, it's the question of our time. Deus Ex Mankind Divided. I think we can stop and pause on that. I think that's probably one we're both pretty excited about, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's a great franchise. Did you play Human Revolution?
I did. That was actually my first Deus Ex game.
It's, you know, Deus Ex, I bought the first one back in, I guess it was around 99 when it came out, and it was a real revelation at the time. I mean, that game still is a real masterpiece of storytelling and gameplay, and it introduced a lot of elements that are still with us today. It doesn't look like much anymore. I mean, the graphics have definitely not aged well, but it's a really solid game, and even the sequel was quite good, the first sequel. And then Human Revolution really gave it such a great relaunch.
Yeah, to me, I think the one, you know, besides the things you kind of mentioned, that was kind of one of the first games where I felt you could actually play it a different way. Like, if you wanted to take your chances and go in guns blazing, you could, and you could get by with that, or you could kind of sneak around and use the cool, like, tech that the character has, you know, and there were different ways to use that. And I, you know, that was kind of one of the early games I can remember where there were kind of different paths and you weren't on that sort of linear A to B and there's only one way to get there.
Yeah. And it really, I think it was, and remains, it's a very adult game series, and, you know, it's adult without being, you know, adult in the sense of that it's just extra violent. It actually, like, tries to tackle some interesting sci-fi themes. I mean, you know, in our trailer segment, we talked about Assassin's Creed. I mean, Deus Ex, actually, I think would make a pretty awesome movie. It's actually really thematically interesting. And it is, you know, it's a game where there's just this rich world that you're in that actually feels legitimate and interesting. And you actually want to explore. And, you know, you go into stores and you go into office buildings and you're in these kind of locations that actually feel kind of lived in. And in a way that most games don't bother to build. Most games feel like they're just building kind of battle arenas. But you spend a lot of time in Deus Ex interacting with the environment, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Dishonored 2, Final Fantasy 15, You know, because we definitely need more of that. Another Forza game, something called Fury or Fury. I don't know what that is. Guilty Gear XRD Revelator, another Hitman game. I Am Setsuna, Just Cause 3. Did you ever play the Just Cause games? I can't remember.
I played some Just Cause 2. And I mean, you know, it was fun for a day or two. I mean, it's just basically a big destruction sandbox, but right. I didn't spend a lot of time in it.
Yeah, I don't think I ever got into that. Okay, Legend of Zelda for Wii U, which they're going to have an interesting time selling that game when they're about to release another system early next year. It's like, why would I buy that?
Do you know? I actually don't know. Is this a remake of a previous Zelda, or is this a completely original Zelda?
It's my understanding this is an original Zelda.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah, I mean, they re-released a couple games, I think, since the Wii and the Wii U. And for the most part, you know, it was to very positive, you know, reviews. But that's, of course, because they were great games. And what were, you know, if you re-release a great game, people aren't going to say it sucks. They're just going to be like, well, okay, maybe it wasn't graphically as powerful. But, you know, I don't know.
It's still a good game.
It's still a good game.
5 years ago and 20 years ago, and it's. I have to tell you, I don't like the Zelda games, and I know that makes me kind of a heretic. I just don't. I've never found them. I tried Twilight Princess. I tried Wind Waker. I can't. I don't enjoy the mechanics, and I don't enjoy the characters, and I don't enjoy that no one speaks. Maybe I'm just. Maybe I'm just too new school, I guess, or something. I just can't. I've never been able to get into one of them.
Well, I think so. The next one on this list, I think, is interesting because it's Mass Effect Andromeda, which unfortunately has been already pushed to 2017, which made me cry when I heard the news. I always thought Mass Effect sort of realized what I wanted Legend of Zelda to be. I wanted to hear people talk. I wanted the story to be a bit more connected and meaningful. And that's not to say Zelda doesn't do a good job of that. But it's not the same when you're actually having a conversation and it's like too much text. I want to hear these characters talk.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Mass Effect games were phenomenal. I thought the way you could carry over a save game across three games was unreal, and the way they kind of called back to game decisions you made in the first game, even in the third game, was just was really cleverly done. I felt like by the third game they were kind of cheating a little bit, like, you know, if you lost Rex, they subbed in another Krogan, and, you know, like they were kind of playing around to kind of make it so the game worked, you know, given this huge tree of decisions that could have happened before. But I mean, you know, I think EA has a real winner in Mass Effect, and that would be, for me, an absolute day one buy. I'm prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I'll finish the list here. It's really the only day one buy I see from, you know, for my taste. All right, so there's Motor Racer 4, Persona 5, Star Ocean Integrity and Faithlessness. That's one of these Square Enix games I've never heard of. Siberia 3, there's a game called The Turing Test here, which sounds, you know, like it could be anything. Titanfall 2. Did you like Titanfall?
I did like Titanfall. Yeah, that was satisfying. I didn't play it for a very long time, but I got a couple of fun weeks out of it. Sure, that was good.
I wanted to like Titanfall. I mean, I was waiting for mech games. I loved Mech Assault. That was one of my favorite games on the Xbox. I played the Dickens out of that game. And that was where I met, you know, a lot of people early on that I would game with, you know, over the lifespan of the Xbox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then they came out with the sequel on that, and then the franchise kind of fell off a cliff, and then I didn't get my mech fix until Chromehounds came out, which was another game I loved, that was a Sega game where you could just customize the living daylights out of your mechs and take them online and fight with people.
I don't think I played anything with you for about 6 months after Chromehounds came out. You were a Chromehounds addict.
I was obsessed with that game. I was obsessed with building the best mech I could, and you could share, you know, designs and parts with your friends. And yeah, I got lost in that one. And when I finally came up for air, you know, later on, I was looking for a mech game and nothing. And then Titanfall came out. I don't know, just, I couldn't get into that game. I really wanted to. There was some. That's one of those games where I think it might have drawn me in had there been an actual legitimate single player campaign.
Yeah, the single player campaign was borderline non-existent. Yeah,
right. It was just a stringing together of like training missions, essentially. Right. There wasn't anything substantial there, and that really kind of threw me off, and it just I never got hooked, and there's just zero chance I'm gonna give Titanfall 2 a chance. And I don't know, somebody out there, if you're listening at Sega, Chromehounds 2, let's have it.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I would say about Titanfall is that it reminds me, the criticism about Titanfall seems very similar to the criticism about Star Wars Battlefront, which is that they really kind of appeal to this kind of casual player and don't reward the player who really puts time in. It's probably why I like those games, because, you know, I don't play 5 and 6 hours at a clip anymore. I just, life doesn't kind of allow that. And I can hop into Titanfall quickly for 30 minutes or Battlefront for 30 minutes and have a fun time and then be done. But, you know, so I don't feel like I've really found them too thin, but I can totally see how someone who was, you know, kind of a all weekend long hardcore stay up all night player would find them unsatisfying that way.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're coming from on that. All right, so then there's only three more games on this list: Warhammer 40K, Inquisitor Martyr, Yesterday Origins, and Zero Time Dilemma. So that's 23 games. This convention is happening in a month. I don't know what's happened to E3. I feel like this is way too few games for my recollection when I used to go back when, you know, it was open to media and fans. I don't know if the industry has changed and companies just kind of want to go out on their own terms and a convention like this doesn't appeal to them, or whether it's happening at a bad time in the development cycle. But I would be, if I was covering this on a media basis, I'd be like, really, that's it? Because, you know, that list, these are games, some of them, they're not going to have anything to show. And plenty of these, probably it's already out there anyway. And maybe that's part of the problem, too. You know, maybe it's, you know, there's the trailer culture and you can see it and you can read about all these games. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a very thin list. I think we're seeing, you know, obviously the Wii U. I mean, this is the end for the Wii U. This will probably be the last major title, I would suspect, or one of the last major titles. It's also the end for the Vita. I mean, the Vita is, I wouldn't even say it's on life support. It's, you know, it's three limbs in the ground at this point, which is sad because it could have been a great console. But I'm hoping for some surprise announcements, although those don't usually mean anything that's going to come out in the next 6 months or so. But there's definitely nothing on this list that is overwhelmingly thrilling. I mean, Dishonored 2, I like Dishonored a lot. It was an interesting take on the action stealth genre, given that the last Thief was kind of a disappointment. It was a better Thief than Thief. But there's nothing here I'm really dying to see or dying to play.
Yeah, it's not good. And as you said, right, there's going to be, I'm sure more games will get added to this, but it seems pretty weak. And if E3 has kind of been boiled down to like what surprises that nobody knew were coming, and that's like the best you can hope for, you know, whether they announce the PS4K or they actually show off the Nintendo NX or whatever's going to happen there, that's pretty sad. Like, E3 used to be sort of the convention.
Yeah, and, you know, I wonder if the internet is kind of killing off the need to save everything up for, you know, a big splash. Because, I mean, what seems to be happening over the past couple of years is E3 is more of a... there's a lot more potential to damage your brand than to build your brand. I mean, you look at Microsoft's launch of the Xbox One. You know, Nintendo has had any number of just embarrassingly abysmal E3s, the launch of the PS3, going back a little bit. The moments that people tend to remember from E3s seem like ones where, companies screw up or they make bad decisions or they embarrass themselves on stage, you don't tend to remember the moments that are really exciting or really big. And I wonder if that's just because, you know, we've heard of most of this stuff already, and it's very hard to keep anything a secret.
Yeah, that may be the case. Maybe just the notion of a convention is just sort of outmoded, outdated, irrelevant.
I mean, you know, I think the one company that could be a real game changer at E3 this year is Rockstar, who will probably announce Red Dead Redemption 2. And, you know, a lot of people are really excited about that franchise coming back. There was a leak a couple of weeks ago of what appeared to be a map, and that will probably be the case. I am holding out hope for an announcement of an Elder Scrolls game on the current gen platforms, but those they usually announce a year out. But there's not really anything that I think will be terribly compelling outside of that. We're not going to get a Grand Theft Auto game anytime soon. Those take quite a few years to percolate, and that's probably as it should be. Although I have heard that there's going to be new Grand Theft Auto single player campaign modes release, which I think will be a real win if they can release that as well. I guess we'll get Gears of War 4 in all likelihood. We know we're going to see a new trailer for that, which I don't know. I kind of feel like a little Gears of War out, but you know, that franchise is coming back.
Yeah, I played the Gears Remastered for Xbox One, and it was fun. You know, you got to see sort of the limitations of the game, even though they kind of shined it up. But yeah, I'm not sitting around going, I want more Gears of War at this point. I certainly, not the way that I certainly felt before Halo 5 came out, where I wanted more Halo. I was ready for it.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that you're not the biggest fan of backwards compatibility as a concept, which, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about at length in future programs. But, you know, I think that Microsoft will probably have some big announcements there, too. They've supposedly been saving Red Dead Redemption and Black Ops 2 and you know, hopefully I'm hoping for Skyrim. I would love to get the chance to play Skyrim on the One, because I have to tell you, they really did a bang up job with Black Ops. It's actually runs better on the One than it did on the 360, and if they can keep that up, that could be an interesting announcement. But obviously that's not something that you really need the world's biggest gaming expo to announce. That's a Twitter announcement.
Yeah, I'm with you. And yes, I think that'll be definitely an interesting future conversation where we can talk about backwards compatibility and you know, there's just a slew of remasters that we've seen over the last several years. And yeah, well, there's a little tease for our adoring audience from Lee. All right, well, we're going to wrap up this segment.
Sounds good.
All right.
Well, that's it for our first show. This is kind of a pilot. It's kind of a test. We're going to keep tweaking as we go along, but we like to thank everyone for listening to the Neil Before Zod podcast. My name is Lee Klontz, and with me is Adam Levine. Thanks a lot, and like I said, hit us up on Twitter at Zod Podcast. We'd love to hear your feedback, and please subscribe. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.